There are a number of different areas that you want a logo to achieve.
Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. My name is Pete Everett, and today I am joined by the logo geek himself, Ian Padgett. We have a great chat about logos, brand propositions, what a logo can do for your business. It really is a great episode, and show notes can be found at peteeverett.com/033. Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. My name is Pete Everett, and today I am joined by Ian Padgett, who is the Logo Geek. Good afternoon, Ian. How are you doing?
Hey, Pete. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm very well. Ian and I have just been having a chat about life and about business, and we met a few weeks ago. So, Ian, do you want to give us a quick intro of what you do and,
sure.
Who you are?
Okay, so my name's Ian Padgett, and I'm a graphic designer. For the last 10 years, I've been working as a graphic designer for a web agency. But like on the side, I've been working on practicing and improving my logo design skills. And just for fun at the time, this is about 5 years ago, I started my own company called Logo Geek, where I could just kind of practice logo design and also start writing about logo design. But I've been working on that for a few years now, and it's got to the point now where I've actually gone part-time with the creative director job that I have, and I now focus the rest of my time building up Logo Geek. So Logo Geek is basically, first of all, a logo design service, and then secondly, as part of that, I also create content for other logo designers. So I have a podcast and I have a blog, and I'm also building a community on Twitter. So both sides, I'm able to monetize. So obviously, my client work, I get an income from that, but also having a podcast, I'm able to get a sponsor for that, and building an audience, I'm able to do affiliate marketing and stuff like that. So I'm able to share lots of useful tips and advice in this podcast, hopefully.
There we go. Right, you've just made the rod for your own back there.
Yeah.
So all your Logo Geek stuff is on logogeek.uk, isn't it?
That's
so
correct, yeah.
I'll make sure there's a link to that in the show notes. And there's links off on there to your blog, to your podcast, and to your community, and,
sure,
and that
brilliant.
Kind of thing. So so let me just sort of start maybe back at the beginning a little bit then. So you've obviously a talented graphic designer, you're a creative director. So what was it that made you want to sort of dabble in the world of doing your own thing, doing, you know, something that was just for you?
Well, I would say ever since I've been a graphic designer, so when I first started, I was primarily self-taught. So in order to improve, I needed to practice at home, you know, follow tutorials and stuff. So it's kind of been a mindset that I've had since I started my career. And on the side for years, since basically for the last 10 years, I've been taking on projects. So when I first started, back in the MySpace days, I used to do like logos and album covers and stuff like that for bands on MySpace. And that was just purely just to practice. So I did most of that work for free. I've also done things like movie posters. I've also done things like computer game graphics. And there was one huge project that I worked on for around 4 years just before I started Logo Geek. And it was a very involved game creating, like animation sprites and background graphics and stuff like that. And the game got to a point where we was able to get Chilingo involved, which is it's basically the iPhone company ran by EA Games. So it was a big deal that we was able to get them on, but it also meant they gave us a lot of feedback that meant that we needed to redesign the game again. So we got all the mechanics and stuff working, but we had to start again. So we spent like a year or so working on the initial game, and then we started to develop a new version. And it was a lot of work because everyone that was doing it on the side. So it wasn't like 4 years of continuous work. It was on and off for 4 years. So that did get me into like the routine of working on the side. And it was funny, at the end of that time, even though I really enjoyed the project and it was really exciting, I did feel really burnt out because I was working full-time. My full-time job's always been quite demanding anyway, and then I come home and I had to continue working on these other things. So I was just feeling tired and burnt out. And after that period, a few weeks went by, and that's when I kind of got this hunger again to start working on something. And it was my partner at the time, she mentioned to me that I'm very good at logo design and I'm quite talented with illustration, maybe I should do that. And in comparison to my previous project, logo design is it was ideal because I could take on these projects. They would be fairly short term. I mean, they're normally no longer than like a 2-week period. And then if I wanted to, I could not take any on, or I could take on as many as I want to. And it was also an area that I enjoyed in my job. And at the company I worked for, it was mainly e-commerce websites. And I very rarely got involved in the logo design side of things, but when I did, I really enjoyed it. So it just seemed ideal that I had this opportunity where I could kind of start practicing and learning more. So at the beginning, it was just for friends and family. And I started to build a website, and it was about a few months in, I actually got an inquiry from somebody that I didn't know. They obviously paid for the work, which I hadn't done previously. And I don't know, it kind of clicked something in my head that, oh my God, I could actually make a little bit more money on the side if I offer this to other people. So I started to focus it on Logo Geek. I started to share more content on social media, and things just started growing. And it's been a crazy journey. I started it, it's probably about 6 years ago, and on and off for a few years, it was just kind of like dabbling in it. But 2 years ago, I got to a point where I was getting so many emails, so many messages on social media that it was becoming overwhelming on the side of a job. And I started looking into it, and I worked out that I could probably take this full time now. I had enough inquiries coming in. I was able to get my website on page one of Google for things like logo designer, logo design, logo design UK, logo design Manchester. I also got it for logo design Reading when I lived in Reading. I relocated a couple of years back. But I started to get really good results. So it's about 2 years ago now, I handed in my notice. They offered me a part-time position, which seemed ideal. And since then, I've been growing it. And it's just been crazy because I've got on Twitter, that's grown to about 93,000 followers. I've got a community on Facebook that I started only a year ago, and that's got 6,000 members. And I've declined, so that you got an idea of the numbers involved, I declined about 6,000 people. So I've had
So it's a 50-50 chance as to whether you're going to get in.
I focused on quality, and I don't know if you know much about Facebook groups, but I have questions that you need to answer.
Yep.
And there's a high percentage of people that just don't answer them, or they give useless answers. So I focused on quality over quantity with that. But yeah, it's been a crazy journey, and now since I started it, Logo Geek is now my main income, which is crazy since it started out. It's just this thing that I started for fun.
No, I mean, you've really have grown like an incredible audience. And guys, honestly, go and check out Ian's website. There's links to all of his different social platforms and stuff on there. And you know, if you make the grade, you may well get into the community. it's a bit like joining the Marketing Development Podcast community on Facebook as well. We do exactly the same.
You have to moderate them, otherwise it's a funny thing with groups, but the moment you get a number of poor quality posts, it puts off the good members. So you need to continuously moderate groups, otherwise they just go downhill.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We've taken the so we've been doing the podcast now since March, so we've what, about 10 months in, And we've had the Facebook community for probably about 8 months of that, and we've just hit 100 members. I don't have the stats as to how many I've declined, but the you know, there's certainly been a number of people that I've declined within there. Not in that total as well, but we weren't starting with a Twitter following of 93,000 or whatever it was a year ago. I know exactly what you mean. Those questions that you ask, the thing that really frustrates me about those questions actually is that there's nowhere in Facebook that you can go back and see the answers.
No, you can't. Once you've accepted it, the information is gone. And also any links that people copy and paste in there, you can't open them either. So it's quite a laborious process to be able to go through that information. I think there might be software out there though that can scrape that data.
Now that would be.
I don't know any links, but I can look into it. Maybe you can add it into the show notes. But I'm pretty sure that there is some kind of software out there that will scrape that data, because some people use it for to collect email data. That might be something to look into.
Okay, yeah, I'm certainly going to do that, because it's there's lots of value information, and it's just about understanding your audience a bit more and knowing the types of places that they're coming from, and not necessarily geographically, but from the standpoints, the occupations that they have, that kind of thing. That would be, it'd certainly be useful data to have. You've obviously, considering this is your part-time thing, and you're still doing this part-time, aren't you? That's still the scenario.
Yeah, it's still part-time. I mean, it's something that I've thought long and hard about, like, should I keep that position? But I like the flexibility that it brings, because I do work from home when I work on anything to do with the Logo Geek, and I just find when you work in the same four walls, it can become quite tiring, that you're just living and pretty much working in the same space. So it's nice to be able to have this place where I can go and I can work on different projects, work with bigger companies, collaborate with other people. It's nice to have that for variety. And also I've got the added value that part-time position brings in, a guaranteed income. So even though Logo Geek's been going very well, it's just nice to have that stability. At the moment it's been working really well for me. I mean, there might be some day that I would go pretty much full time on the Logo Geek stuff, and I've got ideas that could possibly make sure to guarantee that I do have an income. But yeah, I'm comfortable with the idea of having this 50-50 lifestyle. It's really good.
One of the things that a lot of people talk to me about is what success looks like, or actually, to say that you're a successful entrepreneur, what does that mean, I suppose, is a better way of putting it. And one of the things I frequently come back to is that it looks different for everybody. And success isn't necessarily a monetary figure. I mean, everybody needs to live. They all have bills to pay, et cetera, et cetera. And, we all like going on a nice holiday once or twice a year, whatever it might be. But actually, you don't need to earn hundreds of thousands or millions in order to get there. So success for you might actually look a bit more like having more time, more disposable time with your children. Or it might be having that work-life balance, in inverted commas, where there's certain aspects of a proper job that you like, but then you're not tied to it for 100% of the time. I find it really interesting that you found that nice balance. You know you've got something. You've obviously built something successful. You can see the stats, and you've already talked about the potential you've got for monetizing those things. Yeah. But you've still said, but actually I still like that. I don't want to run away from it because I don't like it. I just don't want to do that all of the time, which I think that's a nice fresh way to look at it. And there's not many people I've come across that have actually sort of literally taken that view where, no, I do want a foot in both camps.
Yeah. I would say that originally I never actually had any intention to go freelance. My goal for my career has always been to kind of pr- progress up the ladder and work for bigger and better agencies that are out there. It was just purely because Logo Geek was growing so much online unexpectedly, and I was getting so many emails and people was asking for logos pretty much every day. I mean, I'm at a point where I get 10 inquiries a day at least. It's going really well. And I literally went freelance because I thought I'm going to regret this if I don't. So I really enjoy my job. I like working with a team. I actually prefer working with a team. So I don't know. It's just been really nice that I've been able to keep that position that I did have, and also just start working on my own thing and have the time to invest in creating the resources and work on the projects that I've been wanting to for a number of years now.
So are you kind of selective? You know, obviously, if you're getting 10 leads a day, so okay, let's maybe say that averages out at what, 50 leads a week then. Yeah. If you're only doing this part time, are you taking on 50 new projects?
No, I can't. Basically, realistically, I can only really take on one project a week. What I do find is, even though that's a large number of leads, there's obviously logo design is a funny thing that people can look at it and think it's a very basic picture and it takes like 10 minutes put together. So you do get a lot of people that will touch base, and they will expect to pay anything from $5 to $50, which is just, it's not enough money. Like if I was just literally just to take a font and plonk something together, yes, I could do that in 5 minutes. And there are services out there that do provide that solution. But what I try to do is I work towards goals. So I have a goal-based process where I'm looking at the business, the competition and the target audience, and creating a solution that solves all of those things. And in order to follow that process, I need to invest quite a large amount of time. So a lot of the time, price is an issue for a lot of people, because if you search online for logo design, there are a lot of different services out there, from crowdsourced design work. There's sites like Fiverr. There's lots of lower cost options, but then there's also incredibly high priced items. Like logo design is something that seems to have an infinite price range. Like there are companies out there that have invested in over £1 million to get their logo redesigned. So, yeah. So to answer your question, I know I'm not taking on that many projects. Basically, it's just I'm able to take on one a week. I am selective. Like if I don't feel like they're going to be a good fit or a good customer or someone pleasant to work with, I don't have to work with those people. But I don't have a specific industry that I work with. I'm not selective in that way. But yeah, I mean, obviously there are certain projects that come in that if I want them, I'm more flexible on price, and I try to make sure that I got my calendar full. But realistically, because I've got the part-time job as well, I can only really take on like 4 projects a month. So I am selective in a way, yes.
That's good. That's good. I must admit, while you've been talking, I've just Googled logo designer, and yeah, you're dead right. You're there on page one. I can see you. But all of the other results around you, so the ads that are running, yeah, are for people per hour. Then you've got £19.99 premium logo design, yeah, £29 custom logo design, £20 premium logo design. And then the organics, you've got a whole load of frees and £20.
Yeah, there's loads of free tools and crowdsource things, and I can talk through why they're not good quite easily, because things like the crowdsource things, basically in the industry, this is something that's frowned upon, and there's anyone that ever uses one of these things in the industry, they kind of get told off by everybody else, because it's one of those things. It's kind of like modern day slave labor, being, yeah, completely blunt, because people that are investing in this are making 98 people work for free, and one person will get paid, and normally the amount of money that's paid is just not
just ridiculous.
It's ridiculous for the amount of work that's gone into it. And because those people are not guaranteed an income, they are literally just sat there popping out all these logos all day, crossing their fingers, hoping that they get some money. So they're not putting in the time. There's no way that they are able to communicate with the client to understand, you know, the goals and what they're trying to achieve. And, you know, there's just no engagement with it. And also, I find these sites generally attract people from third world countries where they can sit there and work on 100 different things in one day and hopefully get a small amount of money at the end of it. You know, they don't have any understanding of the potential audience and so on. So there's just loads of problems with it. I'm surprised that these companies are able to survive, because I do feel that it is modern day slave labor, and it's crazy because a lot of them are growing. Obviously the free services, I think there's a place for those, because people start businesses, they just don't have any money, but they do just want something to kind of get them going. But the downside to that is that as a business owner, you start investing in getting everything printed and manufactured and stuff like that. It's kind of like a waste of money to not invest in doing it properly from the outset. But it's ideal if you're just a blog, and you just need something to get going, and you're not making any money from it. That's who those things are for.
Absolutely. And there's an element when you're setting up a business, there's an element of, you know, which comes first, the chicken or the egg, doesn't it? In order to invest in a business, you need to have some business, that business needs to be moving. And in order to get that business moving, you do need certain things are expected, like a logo on the, even if it's a generated one, but a
yeah, even if it's just something, you do need something to get going, and that's where I think these things have a place. And I think it's good that those services exist. There's a lot more AI technology coming out, but here today it's still stock-based logos that you couldn't get trademarked. The downside to using them is that if you are building up a brand and you want to become recognized, you could become recognized for someone else, you know, because that symbol could be used by, 100 other people. So it's better to go bespoke where you can. But I do understand that, you know, when you're starting out, you just don't necessarily have the money to invest in that right away.
So just let me pick up on something that you've just said, which was that you have a goal-based process that kind of thing. So in terms of when you're looking at a logo, what are the sort of goals and targets and sort of objectives that you have when you're actually putting a logo together?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so, I mean, there are a number of different areas that you want a logo to achieve. So firstly, you want it to correctly represent who you are. So, for example, if you are a one-man business, you would want to look in a different way to if you was a large corporate industry, for example. Mm-hmm. Or trying to think of some examples. Like, if you are a lawyer, you would want to look particularly different than if you was a children's party company. So, first of all, based on what you do, there would be a specific aesthetic that you'd be working towards getting. So that's kind of the first area.
Yep.
The second area is competition. So one thing that you want to do with branding is differentiate yourself. So from my point of view, I would look at all of the competition. And I mean, if as a business owner, you can do this yourself. But if you see that all of the competition are all using red, for example, you'd want to avoid that, because copying or doing the same thing as your competition, you're basically going to drown in with the crowd. But you don't want to, well, basically you just want to make sure to be careful not to unintentionally use something that your competition is already using. And if there's something that you can do graphically in some way to differentiate yourself from your competition, that's a good thing to do. And then thirdly, dependent on your target audience, there might be a specific aesthetic that you'd be working towards. Because if your target audience are very young people versus older people, there would be a different look and feel that you would be aiming for. So all of these different things, basically I work through a list of goals, and I use that as a tick list. And what I try to do is find a solution that achieves all of that. And then what that does is it just makes sure that when it's actually in the marketplace, you've got the best opportunity to succeed. But if you just went out there with something that was just a pretty image, you could unintentionally be targeting the wrong audience. So you could be in, you could be spending money on marketing and attracting people, but they're the wrong people. And if you get the wrong people coming in your door, you might start lowering your prices and your audience starts dictating your business. So it's finding a balance between all of these things and creating an identity that works for all of those things.
So I know on your website you've got a breakdown of your process, don't you? So you create a brief. I guess what you've just been talking about is like a research and discovery phase, that kind of thing. And all of that happens actually before you put, I was going to say pen to paper, but it's probably mouse to screen.
Well, I do work with sketching, because I find when you work in a computer, it's very artificial and things can look very complete quite early on. But with sketching, it's really funny. Sometimes it's funny because the audience is different. I normally talk to a lot of graphic designers, but sometimes I say, if you draw down the shit ideas first, in your head, they look awful. But when you draw them down, sometimes there's something to it and you can work with it. But if you was going to be working on that on a computer, you'll be trying to perfect it and finesse it. But on paper, you can just scribble. So I do a lot of sketchbook work and brainstorm work, and it's interesting because sketching, you can accidentally draw something that you didn't mean to, and that can actually start to form a very different idea to what you would have come up if you didn't work in that way.
Yeah, no, that makes absolute sense. That one of the agencies I used to work in, the creative director there, this is actually one of my fondest memories of working there, was when we got sort of like a big project in, sort of, you know, like we worked on maybe two or three flagship projects a year. So, you know, they'd last a number of months. And when one of those projects came in, we'd literally clear everybody's diary. So there would have been, what, seven or eight of us working there, like in the same room. We'd clear everybody's diary for a morning. He would give us, we'd get some coffee in and maybe some, you know, some bacon rolls or whatever, you know, make it a bit more informal. He would then go through this creative brief. And then basically the next few hours of our agency life, the rule was no idea is a bad idea.
Yeah.
And he was pretty good at drawing, so he'd maybe do some sketching. Other people just write stuff on up, and but we'd do it on these big like flip chart pieces of paper, and then Steve would then take those off and then process that into whatever the next, you know, the next phase of this project was. But actually having that collaboration, even from people that weren't naturally, you know, I was a developer, I wasn't naturally involved in the creative process, but it was about getting those differences of opinion, different perspectives on a central idea, which could then formulate into something. So yeah, I completely understand where you're coming from. And some of my best agency experiences were actually collaborating on things that weren't really part of my skill set, but was contributing to a bigger picture.
Yeah, because sometimes you find someone might say something and that will spark something else. And it's the same thing, like I said, I draw down everything, even if I think it's a rubbish idea, because it's just a funny thing. Because I find, I thought about this a lot. You know, when you start thinking about visualizing an idea in your head, some people can say it's perfectly formed, but I find whenever I start zooming in on specific features, it just crumbles to pieces, like it's not actually there. So I find it's worth just drawing it down on paper, and then you don't need to start thinking about it. And instead, you can see what would have been, what you thought was a rubbish idea, there's actually something to it, and you can develop that, and it might spark an idea for something else, and it would just end up turning into the best idea that you could possibly have come up with.
The creative process, even I know with you we're talking about a creative process in terms of design, but the creative process is definitely an evolution, isn't it?
And
it,
I mean, there's like I even though I do have that 5-step process, it doesn't always work like that. It can you can go round in circles, and think that you got somewhere and then realize, oh, actually, no, that's not working. It is, you know, if you was going to have a path, it's not a straight path. It goes around in circles and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's funny where ideas come from.
So just developing that a little bit into a little bit further into a slightly different area. So a number of the people, as you know, that listen to this podcast are marketers.
Yeah.
The problem with being a marketer or a marketing consultant is that when you then start working with a client, they assume you know absolutely everything about everything to do with marketing. And rightly or wrongly, logo design or even just design in general kind of gets lumped into that. So if I'm a marketing consultant and I'm working with a client, what are the things I should be questioning, or what are the things I should be looking for in the identities of the customers I'm working with? You know, what are the questions I should be asking
to start developing a brand or identity?
Well, even just to review what they've got. So, you know, what are the sort of everybody can look at a logo and think, okay, so that's a pretty picture, or that's not a very pretty picture, whichever way.
Yeah, okay. So first of all, to steer away from what you just said, first of all, a logo design is a strategic tool. Yep. Whether you like it or not is irrelevant. So first of all, that we need to get that out of the way. And in terms of the questions, I have a questionnaire, and it basically runs through. I mentioned this already, but you understand as much as you can about the business.
Yep.
So you need to understand what service they offer, what their mission and vision is, because that will dictate a specific aesthetic that they're aiming to achieve. You'd mm-hmm. want to research their competition to understand where they fit in the marketplace. You want to understand what price range they are at in the marketplace as well, because sometimes I've heard people say that logo design looks cheap, but have you ever questioned that, what if they are the cheapest one on the market or are trying to be perceived as the cheapest?
Yeah,
so
that's a very good point.
Yeah, it's a funny thing, because I've seen, I've thought about this a lot, because I've had business cards from like plumbers and stuff like that, and I've looked at it and think, this looks awful, they look really cheap. But then at the same time, that's actually why I've got in touch with them, because they look like the cheapest out there. So I think there's that as well. So you need to understand kind of the price point and where they fall into it. And then you also want to understand who their target audience is. As for whether the design is right for them, it's really hard to answer that question without having a specific example, because sometimes I mean, first of all, if it looks amateur, that's obviously a reason that they would need a redesign. But if what they have looks professionally done and they've had it for a number of years and their target audience knows and understands what they do, I would not redesign that. The only reason why you'd actually ever want to redesign is firstly because it's just badly done. You know, they've used a service like Fiverr or one of these free services, and it just looks amateur. So first of all, if it looks bad, then obviously that's when you need a redesign. Secondly, probably the main reason why big companies redesign their logo is because they have a change in strategy in some form, and changing your identity. So I know we're talking about logo design primarily here, but you would normally update your entire brand. So you would change your whole strategy, and that will, changing your strategy would mean that you need to change your brand identity and your logo design as part of that. But because your logo design is kind of like the flag at the top of your business, the thing that that people see, by changing your logo, you are communicating with your audience that changes are happening within the organization. So if the company is established, that's the only instances where I would redesign it. Like if the logo is working and they are recognized, there's no reason to change it, to be honest. Hopefully that's answered your question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I think part of it is just about almost standing back and having that objective view. You mentioned it earlier, you know, actually your logo design, whether you like it or not, it's not actually about you.
No, it's not. Yeah, you need to be clear that logo is something that's performing strategic goals. So, like I said, if you are the cheapest, that's the easiest example to explain because people can understand it. If you are the cheapest service and you're offering the most cost-effective solution, when you compare yourself with your competition, from a branding perspective, do you look like the cheapest one there? Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you look amateur. It just means that there's something about that design that looks like the cheapest one. And the same with being the highest price point in comparison to your competition. And you need to be very aware of that, because if you're creating a product or a service and people are comparing you to other people within within your area or globally, so understanding your positioning is important. I've lost track of what I was saying, but basically you need to understand who you are and what you're trying to achieve so that you can get that aesthetic in the logo.
Brilliant. Yeah, no, that certainly answers the question. Thanks
cool,
for that.
No worries.
So just I suppose this is kind of an element of your own brand, the Logo Geek brand, but also the way that you've then tying this together with how you've then gone on to develop your communities and your outreach and this, that, and the other. You generate a whole lot of content about what you do, don't you? So that, yeah. I mean, in your case, that is logo design and it is showing off your work. I don't know whether you show off some of the stuff that doesn't work, but you know, showing off the work that you're happy with. And then you then create vast amounts of content around that. Some of that's in your Facebook community, some of that's on Twitter, whatever. So I guess there's an element, the point I'm trying to make, I don't know if I'm forming it into a question very well, but is that actually that brand, that strategy, which has worked itself out in your logo itself, has then also then started to inform the other types of content that you're creating. And you know, guys, if you want an example of how that works or how to do that, just go and look at Ian's stuff. I've been clicking around on his website and his social media profiles and stuff for the past hour or so, and you can see the different strands of that coming together. What would you sort of, do you have any advice then that you would give people for actually saying, okay, so now you've got this asset, this logo, we've invested in some of Ian's time to do this research, to put a concept together, we're happy with it, there we go. Have you got any advice sort of following that? What then happens once I've got my nice shiny new logo, and how does that help me with my business moving forward?
Yeah, okay. That question made me think of lots of different things, but I'll try to answer the specific question. So in terms of what happens when you do have your identity, what you then need to do is start basically releasing it. So you're launching your new identity. There's lots of different strategies. So, I mean, if you're a bigger organization, you'd want to do it in a completely different way to if you are a smaller business. And I'm assuming that the target audience here are probably smaller businesses. So in terms of releasing that, you basically just start applying it to everything. So a lot of the companies that I do work with, they already have a logo design, and basically what they would need to do is then update that on everything. Mm-hmm. So any touch point that you are dealing with, I'd start with the most prominent ones. So the easiest ones to update are things like your website, your social media. You can start rolling it out. You can start letting everybody know that you've got this new design done. I always think it's a good idea to put some kind of blog together to officially launch it, so that you can tell the story of why you're redesigning the logo, what's been put together, try and create some enthusiasm around this launch, and then obviously start to apply it to everything else. I would phase it in depending on the size of your business, because if you are you know, if you do have like 100 shops that you need to update, I would phase them in priority order. Because there's obviously a huge cost to that. So What some of these larger organisations do, they would phase it into their biggest store. So if they got one on like Oxford Street in London, they would probably do that first because that would be their flagship store, and then they start phasing it in. Obviously, it would be ideal if you can do it all in one go, but yeah, just start applying it to everything. So updating things like business cards, applying it to your website, applying it to any brochures, stationery materials, and so on. In terms of logo design specifically, typically if you was doing more than just a logo design, you would have had a whole brand identity created, and that would dictate the look and feel of everything. So you basically phase it in because you can't do it all in one go. But yeah, hopefully that's answered your question. But yeah, in terms of your question, I know you're trying to string it together with some specific question, but I would like to expand on that if you don't mind.
No, go for it.
You started to make me think about my content strategy and creating a lot of content around logo design. And there's actually a number of reasons why I've been doing what I've been doing on social media, because Twitter in particular, I've been really focusing on that. And I've had a lot of people, you know, tell me, I never get any business from Twitter. Why are you putting so much effort into it? And I always respond with, well, that's not what I'm focusing on.
Yep.
What I found with my strategy, and and it wasn't intentional, but it's something that I found by doing. I found with Twitter, when you do have a high following, people deem you as the authority in your space. Mm-hmm. And in the logo design space, I've been able to establish a lot of authority in that, and people now associate me with logo design. So even friends and family, they all know me as Logo Geek, which is really strange. But basically, something as basic as posting on social media every day establishes you as the authority in that space, and you get invited to opportunities that are impossible any other way. So in my case, it's things like being invited to be on juries. So I don't need to enter awards because I'm on the jury, and that looks way more impressive to clients. Also, you get backlinks from these companies. You get invited to contribute to authority blogs. You basically, because you are deemed as an authority, and that's why I've been posting every day, you get all these backlinking opportunities, and people link to your site. And it's the same with a lot of the content that I'm writing. I'm not really writing it for people, even though obviously people do read it, but I'm writing it so that I can improve my Google search results. Mm. I can improve my internal linking. I can improve my backlinks. So, just using social media and stuff like that, it just establishes me as an authority in that space. And that's what I'm continually doing. Everything I do, even interviews like this one, I'm doing it to hopefully get backlinks and to build authority online.
Yep. No, that's absolutely true. And you, from a slightly different standpoint, you know, we work with clients through digital marketing, and the generating of backlinks has over time become more of a challenging kind of landscape. It's become more challenging in the sense that, you know, back in the early 2000s, it was a bit of a naughty way of doing it, but you know, there were companies that would sell you backlinks, and that was the way, that was
because it was any link, it used to work. But I mean, obviously, absolutely, now it needs to be relevant.
Needs to be authoritative. It needs to be relevant. It needs to be it needs to be genuine, all of that kind of stuff. And actually, trying to get when we then sit down and have conversations with clients, and they, you know, we're talking about the things we can do for you. Well, we can do this, and we can do that, and we can do that. And then you come to the sticky situation of link building, and you actually say, you know what, that's, we can start to help you position yourself for those kind of things, but actually that's something that we need an element of you in order to achieve that. You need to be the one that's out there in order to get those links back, because it's your profile, it's your trust, it's your authority that we're trying to build. And there's a piece of the jigsaw that we can't do for the client. The client either has to do it for themselves, or we can support them in it, but they have to be the front man for it. So we go through exactly the same process with our clients, or exactly the same thought process that you've just outlined with our clients in terms of their content creation and their content strategies. But no, mate, look, it's been awesome talking to you.
You too.
There's so much more we could talk about. If people want to reach out to you, obviously I'll have a link to your website in the show notes. Where's the best place to get hold of you?
The best place to find me is just to head to legogeek.uk, and on there you should be able to find links to my other profiles. I'm actually most active on Twitter. I was going to say Facebook, but it's in a closed group. The best place to find me is through Twitter at @logo_geek, or just by searching Logo Geek on Google, and you can find my website, and it's got all the details on there.
Ian's not kidding. You literally Logo Geek, you're definitely at the top, but Logo Design, you're there. Logo Designer, you're there. Just search Logo anything, Ian will show up.
It's fine. It's pretty much like that now.
he's the one with the glasses.
Yeah, that's the guy with really the glasses.
Brilliant. Thanks for your time, Ian. Really
appreciate it. No worries, Pete. Have a good day.
Thanks so much for your time, Ian. There was so much actionable advice in that episode. It really was great to interview you, and thank you for offering so much to our community. Please come and join us in the Facebook group at peteeverett.com/group, or search Facebook for the Marketing Development Podcast, and we'll see you in there. Until next time, have a great week.